Welcome to another episode of Threads of Enlightenment. As usual, guys, you know my custom and my habit is to welcome our guests because I know they're coming with a couple of things very expensive. And I got a trooper in front of us here in Nico. And so, Nico, I want to thank you for coming because I know time is one of the most precious commodity offered to mankind on this planet. Many of us have misused it. We don't understand the value of it. We haven't learned to respect and honor her. And when we do that and respect and honor her, she respects and honors us. And so I want to thank you for coming and sharing such precious commodity. The other is your journey. The journey is a creator. It created you. And all that you are today, your wisdom, your knowledge, your insights, your ability to express to us how you came from one arena into the other. And so we want to thank you so much and give you honor as you have come here to share with us all of these things to enrich us so that we can become better human spirits. Nico, welcome to Threads of Enlightenment, man.
Thank you so much. I appreciate this time and space and the opportunity to use the platform. And I look forward to our conversation. I believe that this can be helpful, not just to both you and I, but to those who are listening. So greetings to all listeners.
Thank you, man. Welcome. One of the questions that I mentioned to you, I love to ask this. How do you serve mankind? And I mentioned it to you. The reason why I do that is so that the listener can understand that there are two journeys here, the individual journey and then the interdependent journey, what we call servanthood. And that's the place to live, man. It's beautiful. How do you serve mankind?
I serve mankind as a giver, as a guide, as a teacher. Not because I know more things than anybody else, but because I understand how to extract things from ourselves that others are still searching to extract from themselves. So have you ever, when you were asking that question, the immediate thought that came into my mind was that book, The Giver. And I read it when I was a child and it stood out to me because this world is full of individuals who only see black, white, and gray. And then there's individuals who walk into our lives and they bring in a little bit of color. They show us, hey, this is how you can perceive this situation. This is how you can receive that circumstance. This is how you can dance in this thing called life and enjoy the dance.
I love it, man. One of the things I tell people, Nico mentioned book, the effect of book and books. And book is any type of book is the individual's wisdom, knowledge, insights, to just laying it within those pages, but they're pretty powerful if you allow it to reside and live within you. And when it hits there, we call that part of us, our subconscious being, when that soul individual gets it, it becomes a reality. Allow yourself to read. And allow yourself even so to get understanding. It'll change your life. Nico, one of our customs here is to go back into that place that we first visit. We visit a couple of spaces, I tell people, when we're moving through life. And the very first space that we reside for a couple of years, we call that the home, where we get to mingle with mom and dad based on whatever trauma they went through. They are now going to then begin to deposit data, if you will, into us. And again, mom and dad, whatever trauma they have, see the world and their perception, they're going to start to feed us some of that data, and it begins to do some things to us. How was your family unit like?
Not a blessed family unit. Both my mother and father were participants in my life, and then I had the additional wisdom and knowledge of my grandparents. From early age, 2 years old to about 6 years old, I spent most of the time with my grandma and my papa, elders, basically. And I spent days on days, weeks on weeks with them traveling. Yeah. And so I got to see the world from a different space. So that by the time I was 6 years old, 7 years old, I had a nickname at home and it was called Little Man because I conducted myself just like a little tiny man. And that's how the world went. It's interesting how you say the traumas of our parents then imprint onto our minds. Two of the most predominant things that I will say about my parents is my father. He is very focused on relationships. He mm-hmm. loves relationships. He loves interacting with individuals. My mother is very focused on data. She loves to have information, and that's how they like to move. So from a very young age, I learned that facts matter and feelings matter as well, which can create a tension within oneself. My grandmother, she was very much focused on facts, as she was a wonderful woman. She taught me many lessons, some of them that I have been so important that I tattooed them onto my body, just because they must stay with me forever. And then my papa, he taught me hard work. He showed me what it was like to get down and do what you need to do to support your family.
Yeah, that was a powerful basis to be, man. And you had great sages, if you will, with mom and dad. I always tell people, though, Nico, that the trauma that we suffer as young individuals is the tool by which we become servants. It becomes our superpower as we go through our journey. We then take it and we create something different from it and through it. And it becomes a space by which we can now reach and assist someone to move through that similar situation because we have learned how to implement a couple of things that can bring them through, as you said, guide and teach and help them to move through. As you're talking about mom and dad and grandparents and the traveling, which is, I love that when young ones travel because it opens their eyes and it creates within that individual different perspective, if you will, when you look at others outside of your space moving, especially with mom and with grandma and papa walking with you and taking you through. As you are there in that space within your family, again, going back in the time machine of memory, what was happening to Nico? What did you remember this young being like, if you will?
The positive was that I remember understanding that there is not very much that you can depend on. That's the positive. The negative was a feeling of rejection. I have a younger sister, and my sister got to spend many of her early formative years with my parents. I spent many of my formative years with my grandparents. There's reasons for that, not anything malicious, but there's just reasons for it, you know, family situations. And so I had a feeling of rejection that always sat in the back of my head. How come I had to go spend time with grandma and papa, but my sister got to spend time with mom and dad? One of my fondest memories was that books take you away. So my papa, he was a lumber foreman in the southwest portion of the United States. So we would drive from Arizona to New Mexico, New Mexico to Colorado, Colorado to Utah, in the Four Corners. One of my favorite memories about driving was that I always had a snack, and that was a box of Lucky Charms, dry cereal, and that I always had a Archie magazine. So anytime we stopped to fill up gas, anytime that we stopped for the evening, I would always get a refill of some Lucky Charms and Archie magazines.
Man, you're dating yourself with Archie magazines, man. That was way back. Because I remembered some of those as well. And the reason why I ask those questions, Nico, is to go back in and begin to uncover that thread that will walk with us through the remainder of our life. And we will always discover more about that thread. And that's what the journey is about. And yours is rejection in a sense. And based on that, I tell people, we as human beings, we will make internal decisions based on that information, that data. And that internal decision was made by that young man's soul, is what we call the subconscious being. And when the subconscious being makes a decision, you will be amazed how it comes to pass. It's just how it is. So here's this young man. What was the decision, Nico, that he made, that internal decision that he said about concerning the feeling of rejection? What was that conversation, if you will, that he had said to himself when he was a young man?
That conversation happened when I was a young man and still happens today sometimes. There's two things, two sides to every coin. The first side of the coin was that if my own family couldn't love me enough to keep me around, how could anybody else love me?
Yeah.
So I began to self-reject, right? Yeah. And then the other side of it was, well, if I am already rejected, then I must learn a hyper independence. Yeah. So I must learn how to survive on my own, even if I have others around me to help.
Yeah, that's a powerful lesson, Nico, because I said the same statement in mine. I had encountered some trauma from the folks that were supposed to love me more than anything, you know, my parents. And I said to myself as a young man, if they can do that, then anyone else can. Based on that decision as a young man, I made a decision that governed my entire life, all my relationships, every decision that I made about a relationship was governed by that encounter that I endured as a child. So I know exactly where you're at when you've said that. As you're moving through your life, man, and you're growing up, your school, when it comes to school and that conversation about school and moving from that space now of family, heading closer to becoming independent, if you will. What was your conversation like with you or with your papa and grandma and stuff like that as you're facing that direction, heading in out there?
Well, that's where I faced another set of rejection. My papa died when I was 6 years old. So my grandmother sent me to go stay back with my parents. And it was right about the same time that I had to enter grade school. So it made sense. Yeah. That's where I realized again that nobody's going to be around forever. Yeah. And death is a form of rejection when you don't have a proper framework of it.
Someone
leaves your life and you don't understand why. There's a grief that comes along with that. And with that grief that comes along with it, you process it your own way. So as I went into school, I always understood that people were going to leave. You know, people were going to leave no matter what. But I also found inside of school that because of the wisdom that I had gotten, the habits that I had been built, the discipline that I had received from the older generation, I was different than a lot of the other students that were in school. And that difference, that differential made me stand out both to my peers as well as the teachers. Yeah. So teachers would give me additional assignments in top of the work that we were doing. I had social assignments that were placed upon me. I remember very young being in school and being told that I'm a leader. Nico, you're a leader of your peers. So what you do, everybody else is going to be doing too. And became one of the room tilters is a way that I've heard it described. Mood setters. And that's how school went. I'd show up to school and I would set the mood. I would show up to school and I'd set the tone. And so days that I was excited, days that I was enthusiastic, days that I was joyful, they went really smooth. But the days that I was angry, the days that I was shameful, the days that I was feeling guilt, those seemed to just drag. I like how you said, if we don't respect time, then, you know, time has a way of treating us. And I think that it's a moment by moment experience on how we interact with time. People call it flow state, right? When you're living in the way that you need to be living, you're staying in the vibrational states that need to be stayed in. And for me, that's love, joy, peace, encouragement, courage. The ones that we seem to get punished by are the ones of guilt and shame and pride and anger and fear. Because I say punished, but those are the ones that don't ever seem to end. Like you can sit there and feel guilt and shame, and 3 minutes will pass, but it feels like 3 hours have passed. So,
So. Yeah, it's the, I have this thesis, Nico, that I tell people about, and it's just my thesis, you know. I've seen a couple of things being 62. I believe that when we are in mom and dad's, the mom's womb, the programming begins. The programming is energetic in most cases. And so that youngin is very sensitive to energy when they are born. And we start accumulating data all the way there. And that's where I believe that's why we will always continue unearthing trauma, because we were traumatized from mom and dad's arguments, their joyfulness, their sadness, the music that we hear, the conversation outside. And so I believe all this programming, Nico, starts with us, and we become familiar with the negative ones. Very few families or people will experience the deep stuff of love and the different other vibrations that you talked about, the higher ones. And we have to go through that journey to discover those things. There's laughter, but there's not joy. And not until you go through on your own and start getting things in. So here you are. You are moving forward, going into the beginnings of your beginnings, if you will, as entering into manhood and all of those different things that they tell us. As we are heading there, you're heading there, Nico, with your leadership skills that you have noticed, and you're noticing your days of highs and lows, which direction did you pick when you're heading there? College, or did you go towards work, being with you know, the habits that we get from the elderly? What was that conversation with you, more so than with your family, because it still has to do with you? What was that language that you were saying to yourself?
At 14, I decided that I was grown enough to join the workforce.
Yeah.
And so at 14, I decided to join the workforce and stop pursuing that education.
Yeah.
And that, even now I look at myself, I'm like, you idiot. I think you knew the world so well at 14 years old to join the workforce. You are an idiot, young man. But it was beneficial because I felt in place. I was around individuals who thought the way that I thought. I had an older soul, is what some people say. And so being around grown men working, that's where I felt the most comfortable.
Yeah,
got a job as a gopher on a construction site, and I just go pick things up for someone else and I bring them back, and I learned trade. I learned how to frame. I learned how to lay drywall. I learned how to lay stucco. I learned how to put tile on a floor, and I understood create. Like, when you could create, there's a joy that you get out of that. And so even now I could drive through some neighborhoods and I'd be like, oh yeah, I helped put the addition on that house. Yeah. Tell you exactly where we messed up too.
I'm laughing, Nico, because I know exactly what you are saying, because I was a project manager and I used to build different condos and stuff like that and homes. And you drive by and go, oh, shake your head, because you know what you did in that one, you know. And that's why I just laugh, because I get exactly what you're talking about. And well, that's a powerful place, though, for a young 14-year-old man to be with amongst men, learning the art and trade of construction and building and all that stuff. That's a great place, Nico, for any kid, if you will. But also this kid is hearing the languages of the adults. And so I'm wanting to know if by 14 and a half, you can cuss as best as all these
two
guys.
Two languages I can cuss with the best of the best.
Because I get exactly what you're talking about, because I was there, and I know that that energy and the energy there, a lot of fun, but for me, it was just a blast, man. So how was your time there? learning and interacting with all of these different types, because it's different languages, as you said, different culture, different mindsets. How was Nico navigating within that framework? Because as a gopher, you have to be able to navigate within that framework.
I loved it. It fulfilled a feeling of being accepted. The better that I worked, the more I was accepted amongst all the different trades. Yeah. It wasn't just anymore that the foreman said, hey, Nico, go for this. It was, hey, my subcontractor, the plumber, he needs you to work with him for the next 2 hours. Whatever he tells you to do, you do. And okay, I'm a representation now of the foreman. So let me go out here. I was accepted. The plumber would be like, this is what I need you to do. Dig a trench. Go get me these pipes. Cool. Dig the trench. I'll go get the pipes. The electrician would come. Sparkies. Hey, we need you to thread through these walls. I need you to crawl up into this attic. Because I was still such a young man, I was able to fit places that these older men weren't able to fit. So, you go do crazier things. Hey, we need you to climb these trusses and hold this up. It's easier. It's easier than using a ladder because you can get up and down quicker. Going around the painters when the painters would come, going around the tile setters when the tile setters would come. I had this adaptability, and that adaptability made me feel accepted amongst many different tribes, if you want to call them that, because the work site is essentially that, a country in its own, and you have your different tribes coming in and out.
Yeah.
And so I felt accomplished and I felt accepted.
Yeah. It's a great man. I love the food trucks when we used to work in, and all the different type stuff coming through that place is absolutely some of the best food in the world was coming off of those little trucks that people would never even stop. And having those family recipes cooked, you know, for generations is awesome. So here come Nico. He's in this place. He's becoming, if you will, that knowledgeable individual with all the different trades and stuff like that within himself. Nico, because I know what being around that type of space is, all these guys that you're talking about are entrepreneurs. Did it begin to spark within you? Because every part of those trades are individual businesses. So what was it doing to you as you're learning all of these things? Who was dancing within your head as you're putting all of these things together, getting older as you move through your life and having access to all of this type of wisdom and knowledge about starting a business, the pitfalls, all of that stuff. What was going on with you, Nico, about that?
Two things. One, it's that if you can feel a need, then you are valuable to somebody.
Yeah.
It's the first thing that I noticed. And two was that there's sellers and then there's buyers.
Yeah. And
the sellers seem to collect more money than the buyers seem to have. So I learned that you're going to be a seller. If you can be on that side of the table and you can sell and meet a need, then you could be of service to people, because selling is serving, essentially.
Yeah, it is.
When I, quick story, when I was 14 years old and my mom found that I was enjoying work, because it was supposed to be a punishment to get me to go back to school. And it wasn't. For me, it was a great time. She had a conversation with the foreman, and she told the foreman that he needed to fire me, because if he didn't fire me, then I wasn't ever going to go back to school, and she wasn't going to have a dropout as a son. So when I, 14 years old, that summer ended, and the foreman tells me, hey, you could stick around, but your mom's going to make me fire you. And as any man knows, you don't really mess with the mama bear when they say something. So he's like, so I'm going to fire you, but you have a job. If you go to school, you have a job every summer here. Every break that you get, you can come work for me, and I'll put you to work. And so I went back to school, but I had learned within that summer time frame that you sell whatever you could sell to meet a need for other individuals. And that's where my entrepreneurial journey started. But the other side of it is my entrepreneurial journey started with the illegal things. So when I was 15 years old, I entered school and I see everybody wanting to smoke. They wanted to smoke prime times.
Yeah.
There's the need. And they didn't have the money to get it themselves, and they didn't have the person to get it themselves. I did.
Yeah.
So I'd pay my older homie, go buy me a few packs of prime times, and I'd sell them individually to all the people that wanted to smoke. And so I understood how to supply and sell. And so going into my more formative 17, 18 year old self, it wasn't just prime times. It was other substances as well. I call them products, but they're just other substances. And I'd work whenever I needed to make some extra cash. And then I'd use that money to turn $1 into $3.
Yeah,
and I learned that the system was very beneficial, just not to me, but also to that little Nico that wanted to be accepted, because that was always the root issue. And because now I was being accepted because I could supply things, not so much for my actual core values.
Yeah, it is. As I said, Nico, I always ask the question in the beginning to uncover that thread, because that thread, once uncovered, you will see it all the way through that person's life. And it is the genesis that causes the internal clock and the decision-making process, even though when people don't recognize it, you don't even see it. But it's that internal thing that was sitting there that will cause you and I to make decisions all the way through our lives until we begin to face that thing, which will come in what is called that journey. And as you're 17, 18 years moving through and understanding the value of the different products and pricing and all that stuff, to me, that's all entrepreneurship. That's all it is. It's just people doing it different ways and whatever. But the mind, the precept, the understanding, the mindset is what is learned in there. As you're moving through, getting older, you're heading into your life, young man, past your teens and stuff like that, because I know from listening of some of your stuff as to when you began to really deconstruct, if you will, your life and all the different things that started compiling on you. As you're walking through and you're moving through, Nico, what was your conversation with you? I know you're doing the business with the folks. Folks are gone. You're here by yourself. You're washing your dishes. You're opening up your beer and you're sitting down with your mind. I tell people we are meditative beings. I don't care what you tell me. We are meditative beings. We're meditating all the time, but you don't know it. And so people are afraid of meditation, but I'm telling you, you're meditating all the time. What was your conversation and your meditation, your murmuring, your clock that we call it wheel to wheel back in the day? I got to name myself, you know, of that, those thoughts that just rolling on that wheel to wheel. What was your conversation and your reel to reel, Nico?
The conversation was directed is I need to solve this money problem. I need to solve my relationship problem. I need to solve my living situation. I am the one that's going to be the generational changer. I'm the one that's been gifted. I'm the one that can do these things. It was very much a demanding thought process. And this thought process led me into just a conflicting situation, because to be hyper independent as I was in my early 20s was detrimental. It wasn't helpful. We as human beings, we need community. We need this. We need to have conversation. We need to sit and listen to other people's stories to learn principles and lessons, because we can't absorb them all on our own on the timeline that we've been given. We can't have all experiences within the timeline that we've been given. There's some of us who can participate in behaviors that allow us to have many different experiences along this timeline in a very condensed window. However, those come with consequences, law of polarity. You can't experience joy without deep sorrow. So in those time frames, I was experiencing deep sorrow at times because I was so alone, even with people around me. sitting by myself, like you said, washing dishes, sitting down eating meals by myself was a lonely experience. And because it was so lonely, I always was contemplating ideas and ways to not be alone and to become accepted by other individuals. And I strove for excellence in everything that I did. So if I was going to whatever behavior it was going to be participating in, I was going to be excellent at it. So I was always critiquing myself. I believe one of the benefits that I have is a high self-criticism rate. I'm the hardest individual on myself, even to this day. So a lot of those thoughts were, hey, you could have done this better. Hey, you should have done this better. Hey, you should have done this better. In addition to, I need to get better, basically, in order to achieve these levels of success that I had wanted to achieve. You've used the term trauma a few different times, and I enjoy that term personally. I know a lot of individuals get afraid and spooked by it. So I just want to say that trauma is an expectation that wasn't met. And because that expectation wasn't met, your brain has a different experience associated with it, thus creating the traumatic thought process. So I had expectations for where I was supposed to be at in my early 20s that I hadn't met, and therefore sat in a lot of trauma.
Yeah, I testify to this, to that, Nico, because of the similar genesis with me as well from my parents and the rejection. I individually, I had to be better. I had to prove to do something so that I could be accepted. And so I was always critical. I was always fine-tuning. I was searching. I was always this type, just like you in many ways, in approaching my hardest on myself. There is no one harder on me than me, man. And I had to learn how to forgive that. Man, I tell you, Nico, there were times I'd look at myself and hated the fact that I did something and just turned that on to me, and just it just crippled me until I began to. So I know where you're at and what goes on. So here you are, Nico, you're looking at all of this, and you were, we are quietly, I tell people, we are quietly super competitive. You may not see it, but our minds are super competitive within ourselves. So here you are moving through life, you're getting in there, and you're looking at yourself and you're saying, geez, what was it that caused you, Nico, to go, I need to be serious about this pursuit of excellence in the sense of healing? What were some of those, because it's always a series of events that will lead us, and it's never one thing. It's just, you know, just keeping and chipping and chipping, and then boom. What was your series of events, and what was that catalyst that caused you to go, it's showtime?
One of the most major events was I used to have a friend. I haven't talked to him in a decade, but I used to have a friend. And he had a younger brother. And his younger brother passed away from a small amount of substances that he had just ingested having a party, right? Like at a party, he took some small amount. And it got my brain thinking, because I'd done a lot of substances. Well, what's the difference?
Yeah.
Was it my body tolerance? Was it my mental tolerance? Or was it something greater than myself? And I remember sitting at his funeral and just crying, not so much for the grief of him. I was crying for my friend because he lost his brother, but I was also crying because I knew that this was an indicator that there was something for me to be accomplishing on this planet. And I didn't know what it was. Because I didn't know what it was, that little thread of rejection reared its head. And it said, see, you can't even figure out what to do with your life. Why should you, why should you have it? And that was one of the first ones that I started to ponder what this thing called life was and what my duty in it was supposed to be. And following that, a couple other deaths, a couple other near-death experiences for myself. And then one of the experiences was I'd spent six to eight hours scrubbaging up ways to make some money so that I could fulfill this desire that I had. And by fulfilling the desire, the desire didn't last. It only lasted maybe an hour and a half tops. And I realized the amount of time and effort that I'm putting into fulfilling my desires is not giving me a return anymore that it used to. Because it's not giving me a return like it used to, what if I were to use this time and energy and effort towards the opposite? I've already used it towards everything that I possibly could on this end. What if I were to take a stance on the other side of the stick and see how I could wield it that way? What if I were to pursue a not desire of myself, but a desire of myself, a desire of myself to create the individual that I would enjoy being around? My grandmother said when I was real young, she said, you got to love the person that you spend the most time with.
Yeah.
And as you said earlier, we spend the most time with ourselves.
Yeah.
So I couldn't love myself. And so I began this journey of self-love. What was it that would make me love myself in a way that I wanted to treat myself with excellence, that I wanted to have the best things for myself? I'm still on pursuit of that journey because I had to unravel a lot of these things that we're talking about right now. And that takes time, that takes energy, that takes focus, that takes the staring at fear and telling fear, you have no control here. That takes going around the table and thinking each and every scenario, not just the one that you experience, but the experience of the people around you and how your decisions, your actions impacted them. And so a few of the major events were a couple deaths, getting no return on the investments that I was making, and then being finally rejected by everybody that was close to me. As I said earlier, I haven't talked to that friend in over a decade. And there's a few other ones that I haven't talked to in a decade. And it's purely because they are good friends and decided not to engage with me because of the behaviors that I was participating in.
Yeah.
And so being rejected by them, being rejected by my family, all combined made me realize that it wasn't anything that I was, there wasn't behaviors that I was currently participating in, thought patterns that I was currently participating in that were beneficial or uplifting. So in order to change those behaviors to achieve what I wanted, which was acceptance, I had to change what was going on inside of my mind. And you can't change what's going on inside of your mind until you can view your mind from a third party perspective. And so that's when I began this pursuit of what's going on inside of my mind. What is it that I think on a constant basis? You talked about subconscious mind earlier, and that's just the pattern of thought process that we have created based on the circumstances and experiences that we've had.
Yeah.
To in order to assess those, you have to get outside of those. One of my favorite quotes is that you cannot solve the problem in the same mind frame that it was created in. So for me, I needed to change my mind frame. And a lot of that was removing any type of substance from my life and also checking myself when I was playing the victim, because we all can play the victim. We could all play that card of woe is me.
Yeah.
And removing that as an option was the next thing. And that takes a habitual practice of what is this thought? Am I going to accept it? Am I functioning from one of the fears of shame, sadness, fear, guilt, or am I functioning from a place of gratitude? Because those are what we have control over. And I began to learn that when I function from a mindset of gratitude, I changed my perspective. My environment and my circumstances didn't change, but my thought process did. And by changing my thought process, the behavior in those circumstances changed, which ultimately allowed the circumstances and environments to change themselves.
Yeah, that's, I hope you guys are listening to what Nico said, because that, in a nutshell, that's it all right there. One must, I tell people that, Nico, I said, you become the perpetual investigator, one of your jobs when you start your journey in within your journey in, you know, to yourself, is that you become the perpetual investigator of yourself. You must be, as Nico said, you must be that outside observer looking into the programming and the response of your programming, and began to question, why did you do that? Why did you respond that way? And you began to look at it, as Nico says, you began to look at all the angles, and you will begin to see the answers. And as you begin to change your perspective, it is not difficult. I try to tell people, Nico, it's not difficult, but it's hard. You know what I'm saying? When you get it, when you make that switch, you look at yourself and go, wow, I didn't see it. And it's a minute little thing that you changed, but that minute little thing is powerful to turn an entire ship. The rudder is a small little thing, but it's powerful enough to turn a ship, man, and one of these giant things. And so when you do that with your perspective, you have just changed your mindset. You have just changed your speech. You have just changed your behavior. You have just changed your outcome. That's the natural progression of it. And so, but it takes a degree of bravery. It takes a degree of no excuses. You, as Nico said, you can't play the victim as a perpetual investigator of yourself. You can't play the victim and expect to come out. They don't ever come out. The victims never come out. But when you begin to change your perspective, Nico says, you become a designer. You are now beginning to design a new life, a new speaking, a new mindset, everything, and it will manifest. So Nico, as you were there, you visited the dark spaces, if you will. And within the dark spaces, you recognize that one must become an observer to look and begin to inquire, behavior, speech, all of those things. As you began to do all of that, and this is years, guys. We're not talking weeks and all kinds of nonsense that you guys, because you have that mindset, you will always fail because you're looking at it as some quick fix thing. This is not about quick fix. This is about changing you, a lifestyle, giving birth to something different. As you, Nico, began to institute all of these principles within your life, what did you notice when you became that investigator, that outside individual questioning? What began to happen internally in Nico as he began that space in his life?
One of the first things that happened was I realized how much of a weak being I was.
Yeah.
How much potential I was leaving on the table, how much effort I was not willing to put in. I realized that I was inevitably only giving 10% of the total 100% that I was given.
Yeah.
And when I started to function from that awareness, I then began to increase little by little the amount that I was offering back out of the 100% that I was given, and eventually getting closer and closer to that 100% mark each and every moment, because it is a moment by moment thing. It's not a day by day thing. It's moment by moment.
Yeah.
Giving 100% of what you need. I started to learn how to change my circumstances. I started to learn how to change my environment. You talk about energy exchange. I started to check my energy when I was around individuals. And because I would check my energy around individuals, that required me checking my thoughts. You know, there's a process to doing it. And the first process is to drop any and all vices that you participate in. And vices aren't just substances. Vices can also be behaviors. Mm-hmm. Some people have shopping. Some people have sex. Those are vices when they're overly used to cope with traumatic events and stimulate yourself in times that really you shouldn't be stimulating yourself. Once you remove those from your life, the next thing that you must do is you must control your thinking. Each and every thought that comes through your mind, you have control over. And when you can control your thinking, you can control the way that you feel. And by controlling the way that you feel, others will be able to pick up on that. By others picking up on that, you will have different opportunities, and thus you can take different actions. So once I removed all vices and substances, and even overeating is a vice for some individuals. Yep. Our bodies don't need as much as we in America put into it on a daily on a daily basis. Removing those things allowed me to control my thought process better. And by controlling my thought process better, I controlled my emotions better, because emotions are energy in motion. So by controlling that energy that I was putting out, I was able to see different opportunities around me. And by seeing those different opportunities around me, I was able to take advantage of them.
Yeah.
Again, nothing environmentally has changed. I live in the same city that I used to use drugs in. I live in the same city that I used to participate in bad behaviors in. But because I don't function from that mindset anymore, no longer do I seek out those type of actions. I seek out other opportunities to serve my community. I seek out ways to teach people and use day-to-day actions first for me to be a good display to my community, and then for others to help them switch it just by moments and moments in time. One of the things that I've learned is that there's three ways to change the way that you think. The first way is repetition. That's the most healthiest way. That's why you'll see individuals participate in affirmations. That's why you see some religious groups participate in mantras. That's why you see other religious groups participate in repetition of certain scriptures or books that they like to read.
Yeah.
The second way is to have these high intensity moments. There's these high intensity moments. I call them EMITs, extreme moments in time. Those extreme moments in time will change the way that you think because of what you're experiencing. And then the third way is the most dangerous way, and that's extreme substance use.
Yeah.
Because I started with the third and most dangerous way, I began to reverse engineer. I would see that there was extreme moments people were going through, and I could help them out in those moments. And then I could see people who were visually, I could see it. It's like an additional sense that I have. They were repeating certain things inside of their head. And the more I interacted with them, the more I was able to change that repetition statement. And by changing that repetition statement, we were able to change their actions. That's how I began to formulate what was happening in my own life, because I noticed that the more that I would say certain things to myself, the more those things would happen. So if it can happen with a negative, then it can happen with the positive.
Yeah.
It's the same energy. It's the same focus. Okay. It's the same skill set. And so I began to use it for the positive.
Yeah, it is the very, as Nico said, it is the very same skill set. The church calls it, in certain aspects, faith. You believe in what you say. It is the very same thing for the negative and for the positive. The controller is you, the centerpiece, if you will. What do you want from this time and space we call life? And you are the one that will begin to design and create what you want from it. And it takes discipline. Nothing, and I use the example of a plane. When a plane is not a linear walk, even a plane flight from one destination is not a linear flight. It goes all over the place. There's these things called turbulence. And the beautiful thing about turbulence, Nico, is that they're all different kinds of turbulence, just like everyone have all different kinds of situations that come into the life. But the captain has to be able to learn how to navigate within all the different types of, turbulence. How does he get there? Practice, And so Nico laid out the different ways by you do it, and he's absolutely right. You know, the mantras, that's what these guys, you're rewiring your brain, your synapses, with all of those different ways that Nico had mentioned to you. And so as you're rewiring your brain, it takes time. Don't put the pressure on yourself that it has to happen in 2 weeks. It's not going to happen. But take the time, and what will happen to you as you learn and you've practiced, it will become easier for you when you're in a situation. You will be able to do it in a couple of seconds because you have become that skillful in recognizing when it approaches and understanding what's necessary in order to put this thought into its orbit, if you will. And that's where the dance is, Nico, and you mentioned it. It's that feel, that thought feel. We have to learn how to become masters of that thought feel as to which thought we will give permission to manifest in our life. What other tools, Nico, did you bring in? For me, meditation saved my life in the sense of this, Nico. It was a tool that I was able to slow down my thoughts. Took me some time because the mind is running all over the place, but meditation helped me to pick which ones I wanted to make a reality, put aside the negative ones. I would tell them, they would come and I'd say, no. And I would put it aside and I would say, at this time, I want to focus on this. And so I would focus and see the manifestation, Nico, even before it shows up. I saw the end and before I did anything. And that's what the imagination, I tell people, the imagination is one of the most powerful things a man has. It sees the end, and it then will pull you towards that manifestation. What were some of those tools, Nico, that you brought into your space to help you to navigate and deal with the mastering or the managing, if you will, of your thought line?
Absolutely. Meditation is one that I utilize as well. There's also breathing techniques that I love to do.
Yeah,
there's different patterns of breathing that you can participate in, and that will elevate your thought process into a place where you can override the thoughts that are bombarding yourself.
Yeah.
So there's different breath techniques and breath patterns that you can use. You know, a simple inhale, exhale is great, but if you do two quick inhales and one long exhale, you have to put a little bit more time into that. Yeah. And if you do three or four quick inhales, or if you start to make it different, a medium inhale with quick ones, you're then changing your physical state by just ingesting what's already available, oxygen. So that's one. Writing. When I write, one of my favorite things to do is write out exactly what I want to see happen. And then I live from that place as if it's already happened inside of my head. I can get to know the scent of it. I get to know you talked about visualizing it. I get to know those thoughts. I get to see certain things inside of it. And because I get to see those things, they come to life.
Yeah.
I know it might sound crazy to some, but you have to try it on your own and watch how powerful your thought process is. For me, I am a believer in Jesus Christ, so I do the mantras. I do the affirmations from my holy book, and I repeat to myself things that he has said to be true for me. And so I receive those things, and I have them override the thoughts that come into my head. And when I am participating in certain behaviors, physical behaviors, that's the other one, we don't exercise enough. As human beings, our bodies are supposed to be used. And so for me, one of the other ways that I control my thought process is when my thoughts become extremely excruciating, I change my physical state into a place where it goes into extreme excruciation. And I don't mean in a bad way where I'm cutting myself, but I will do push-ups until I can't lift my arms anymore. I will do squats until I can't move my legs anymore. I will do sit-ups until it's hard to breathe because my abs are so tight and hurt. And by changing my physical state in that way, I've been able to override my thoughts.
Yeah, I'm also, Nico, a believer in Jesus Christ. And as I'm studying the word, and this is what I tell people, the thing that I use the Bible for, and I tell them the difference between facts and truth. The fact is that you're sick, you know, and I use the Bible and stuff like that from my Christian mindset and belief. But the truth says I can be healed, because it tells me that the word of God is truth. That's truth. Now, but I believe my facts over the truth. And so I have to learn how to bring that truth and deposit it into my being, move aside the facts, because the facts are real. You can't breathe, you have cancer, whatever. But that's not the truth. It's just facts. You could change that. I know people that have able to change the facts of cancer without some of what they believe is not the principles that are in the Bible. When you strip it away, it is from the Bible. And so the fact is always changed. You look at your life and you remember when you couldn't do this. You remember that was a fact back then. And back then you thought it was the reality, but it wasn't the truth. A couple of years out, time. You look at that and go, wow, that's a lie. It wasn't the truth. It was just the facts at the time. And so when you realize that there is two different things, there is a fact and there's truth, you'll find the truth and bring it into your life, and it'll change your facts. And the truth will never change. It'll always be the same every year, every minute, every second. But your facts can always be changed by truth, because it says the principle is simple. The truth has the capability of setting you free, not facts. Facts will just keep you in bondage. It'll keep you in this state. And once you introduce the truth, it'll change your life. And that's what we are trying to talk to you guys here. Nico's been with us for a while, and I want him, and I'm going to ask you as to how you ended up where you are today. But I'm going to provide everything for you guys to have access to him, because you need to, because he has been through some stuff. And I mean, we haven't even delved into the negative things because we don't want to talk about that, but you can sense it there. But we want to make you guys aware, because we know you're in pain, but we want to make you aware that there are other energies out there that has the power to lift you up from where you're at into where you want to be. Nico is talking about some of the most powerful things known to mankind. Meditation. It was a practice in Eastern Christianity, what these men did. You read the Bible, all these men meditate, something we've lost. The other thing is the mantra. That's another thing that is is used within that. It tells us meditate on the word day and night. What are you doing? Your mantras. We know that these are things and principles. Write down the vision. He talks about writing it down. It says in the Bible, write down the vision, that the hearer of the vision, the one who reads it, it will make changes. Why? Because it will activate the imagination, one of the most other powerful tools. That's why you're writing it down. So all of these tools, when activated, can bring you your desired outcome. And so I'm going to provide all of Nico's links and all the other things for him, for you guys to get to him. You need to get into his space. So here you are, Nico. You're applying all of these principles now in your life. You're just, man, you're bringing in the breathing, the meditation. You're seeing the results, the tangibleness of your of your life is manifesting. How did you begin to look and head towards that of a servant, as one that looks now and go, wow, I want to do this? And I tell people, we are called to do our assignment. Nico said it earlier before when he was going, what was I called here to do? What? Those are the questions that will lead you to your assignment. That question that he's asking has nothing to do about a job. Is what was I brought here to do? What's my assignment? And so when you began to unearth your assignment and you saw it, Nico, how did it propel you to begin? Because that is another journey. It's another step. It's another walk of faith. It's another surrendering, if you will. How did you navigate from that into becoming, if you will, that individual that is now able to reach back and assist someone?
Such a loaded question there, Ken. The assignment was revealed to me years ago, 2024. So I was revealed to me back in 2019. And we all have gifts, as you said earlier. There's certain talents, there's certain things that you can do even in your sleep. Like if we were to wake you up and have you do something and they tell you, like, from a deep sleep and have you do it, and you're the only one that can do it without even thinking, that's your gift. It's the thing that individuals tell you, and you're the best at this, and you're just like, it comes natural. It takes me no energy, no effort, or minimal effort to do. That is the one thing that you need to focus on. So for me, communicating these concepts, communicating these things in an effective and efficient way so that broad groups of people, mass groups of people can understand them, is my gift and my talent. I spent years crafting it without even knowing. I spent 10, 12 years talking to people over the phone about different things and just learning how to communicate with different individuals on a repeated basis. So for me, when I asked God, what do you want me to do? It was revealed to me, I want you to speak. I want you to speak as if it's me speaking through you. So what you speak to other individuals is going to be a reflection of me. And you can either speak life or death. And for years, you've been speaking death over individuals. And now it's time to speak life. And when I learned that, I started to craft these concepts. When I first started to speak about these things, I couldn't formulate the right words for it, right? Yeah. I couldn't put the words together in a string of consonants and vowels that would make sense from a layman's to an advanced individual. Yeah. And now I have the ability to. I can sit there and speak with theologians and use the exact same book that they use to point out some of the topics that you just pointed out. And I can still go out into the street and talk to a individual who has no concept of these things and give them examples from just their own day's interaction. And it'll be the exact same principle. And that's what I've learned, is that there's principles that we all function by. There's laws that we all function by. And to teach those laws, learn those laws, is what I've been called to do.
Yeah, guys, again, as I said, we're going to provide everything for you to get into his space because, as I said, when a guest shows up, I believe personally, because I do a lot of praying and meditation for my guests before they come. Very picky as to who come, because I know I watch for the assignment, because, as I said, I believe the assignment, they're coming for their assignment. It's not just for an interview. And so Nico has came and he has made us aware of his assignment. And when someone does that, there's a need for that. And those that are listening, I always invite them, Nico, to transition into a hearer, because it's the hearer that will do something. The listener will find another podcast, but the hearer is going to be impacted and changes will come. And so I invite all of you to come into his space, become a hearer. I'm going to provide all of it again, as I said. And we want to thank Nico. Nico, man, I know we haven't even touched it yet, all the good stuff, but I want to honor you and thank you so much for coming to Threads of Enlightenment. I got to bring you back. We got to talk about this a little more.
I'd love to have further this conversation, Ken. It's been a pleasure so far, so I look forward to it.
Definitely, man.